Hello, this is Lois Pausch reading the Vermillion County News for Friday, April the 7th. And I'm very sorry about my reading last week because I think I kept telling you it was March the 24th and it was actually the 31st. Now, I will start with an article with the headline, Zoning Commission Votes Against Bar. Meeting ends abruptly due to lack of quorum. Dateline Danville. Concerns about parking, increased traffic, and having a bar in South Danville residential area caused the Danville Area Planning and Zoning Commission to vote against the bar request at 17 Parker Street. The commission voted 5-0 Thursday night against a special use permit requested by Rush Brothers Incorporated doing business as The Pub for a bar tavern on property it owns near Newton's Restoration and Cleaning Building at the northwest corner of Parker and Catlin Tilton Road that dead ends near there. The Danville City Council will act on the permit by April 18th. Commissioners Adam Brown, Dale Carlton, Minnie Seth, and Katasha Butler were absent from the meeting. When Commission Chairman Tracy Taylor had to leave the meeting early following the vote on the bar special use permit, the Commission no longer had a quorum. Therefore, the Commission could not act upon the remaining zoning issue on its agenda, a zoning petition for 914 North Vermillion property that was for the former Gulix Ileana Medical Equipment and Supply Building. That rezoning request will now come back to the Commission on May 4th. Those speaking against the pub owners opening another bar included Glenda Heath. Heath said her son owns the house at 910 Forest Street near the proposed bar. It's a racetrack now, and it's going to get worse, she said about the traffic. But she said her main concern is her grandson. She doesn't want a bar in his backyard as he grows up. Next door resident Ryan Scholl also commented about his two children who play near the building. Just think of the families involved in it, he asked the zoning commissioners. Scholl said he'd like to see the area remain largely residential. He's also concerned about increased foot and vehicular traffic. Neighbors signed a petition against plans for the bar. Tilton Planning Committee Chairman Ron Spertoli also commented on the permit request. He said the land the Rushes own across the street from the building that is proposed for parking is zoned residential in Tilton. The building is on land in Danville, but the land across the street is in Tilton. He can't turn it into parking until it's rezoned, Spertoli said. Henry Rush told the commission the building has been vacant for about 5 or 6 years and he wants to do something with it. He said he'd like to have a video gaming cafe there, but in Danville it's not allowed. Proposed is bar and video gaming terminals. He'd also like to have car shows and other events there. Food would not be served there at first, but maybe in the future, Rush said. I'm just trying to do something with the building, he said. Danville Planning and Urban Services Manager Chris Milliken said parking is a concern and he's not sure how it would be addressed. He added that other uses could go in the building. And the second article has the headline, Veterans to Move into Honor House Next Week. Dateline Danville. Russell Huffman got teary-eyed when he learned that he'd be moving to a new home. Huffman, a Vietnam War veteran who served in the Army, had been living at Honor Neighborhood Building 101/7 at the Veteran Affairs Ileana Healthcare System for several years, so it was a thrill for him to move into a new building with a home-like atmosphere. Huffman, formerly of Evansville, Indiana, helped cut the ribbon to Honor House, a greenhouse project, during a ceremony Thursday afternoon. The 10-resident house will open next week, followed by the nearby Valor House. It's your home, recreation therapist Jenna Butler told Huffman as they waited for the ceremony to start. Soon, she told him, he would be moving his belongings across the campus. Huffman nodded and said it was nice. With the ribbon cutting, there now are 4 greenhouse project homes at the VA. The first 2 homes, named Freedom and Liberty, were completed in December 2011 and January 2012, respectively. The 5th and 6th homes are in the design phase. Eventually, Ileana hopes to have 10 homes with a total of 100 veterans receiving skilled care. The Greenhouse Project is a new approach to long-term care where nursing homes are replaced with small, home-like environments. Each veteran has a private bedroom and bathroom, as well as access to a shared living area, kitchen, and dining room. Each house, about 7,500 square feet, can accommodate up to 10 veterans. Honor House will provide short-term rehab care, while Valor will be for veterans with dementia. Frank Brunacci, whose father lived in Liberty House, said when he first heard about the homes, he thought, "That's nice." When he actually moved his father, Joe, into Liberty in January 2014, his nice turned into wonderful. Joe turned 100 at Liberty and died in January 2016. His care was outstanding, Brunacci told the audience. It was truly a home environment. If Joe woke up at 2 a.m. and went into the kitchen for a sandwich and coffee, the Shabazz, primary care worker, would make sure he got it. "The care is excellent, but the caring is even more superb," said Brunacci, CEO at WorkSource. They didn't just care for my father, they cared about my father. He added, "I don't have enough thank yous in my heart." Jennifer Musall, a greenhouse guide who oversees the day-to-day operations of the homes, gave an overview of the Greenhouse Project at the VA, which started with an idea in 2006. The VA Ileana Healthcare System was the first facility in the Veterans Health Administration to offer inpatient veterans access to this style of living arrangements, and the first agency in Illinois as well. "Illinois is blazing a trail for innovation that many people are watching," she said. In 2013, the facility received the Undersecretary of Health's Award for Innovation in VA Community Living Centers for excellence in its use of the new model of care. "More importantly, the greenhouse homes are slaying the dragon of institutionalism," Musall said. "As the caregivers develop a relationship with the veterans, and the residents have a warm place of comfort and safety. The veterans are free from the limitations of an institutional schedule and live in a comfortable daily life, sleeping, eating, and engaging in enrichment opportunities as they choose. Meals are prepared in the kitchen and served at a large single dining table. The green in the name means that we support growth through natural lights, plants, and outdoor activities," close quote, she said. "Also, the veterans continue to grow in many ways, even as they grow older." Stephanie Young, Ileana director, said she didn't know about the green home model when she arrived in December 2015, was impressed when she took a tour. "This is not a building. It is going to be a home for our veterans. It takes many people to create something like this." Young explained that the word Shabazz is derived from a fabled bird in Persian mythology who guided people in need in difficult times. Similarly, today's Shabazzim, plural for Shabazz, will help guide the veterans in need. Each home will employ 9 Shabazzim who provide personal care for the vets while doing the routine household tasks. "Those workers are certified nursing assistants who have advanced training and work as a self-managed work team. There also will be clinical support team available to support the Shabazzim, and the nurses will be available around the clock. We have an awesome staff that takes their duties very seriously," Young said. She also thanked several groups and individuals that have helped veterans at the Green Homes. And now a sort of, coordinated bit of news. The next article has the headline, "Vets Who Missed Diploma Sought." Danville High School officials are looking for former students who withdrew before graduation to serve in World War II, the Korean War, or the Vietnam War, and are interested in receiving a diploma. Those who are may contact Registrar Mary Ellen Busking at the high school, 202 East Fairchild Street, or call her at 217-431-1507. They must bring a copy of their honorable discharge paper. Veterans may choose to receive their diploma at the high school's annual Salute to Veterans concert held at 7 p.m. May 11th at the Dick Van Dyke Auditorium. And the next article has the headline, DHS sets youth leadership event. Dateline Danville. Teams from high schools all over Vermilion County will meet next week in Danville to tackle local issues during the area's first Youth Leadership Conference. The Vermilion County Youth Leadership Conference on Diversity and Collaboration is part of a larger project called Roots of Diversity, organized by the five-member Future Problem Solvers at Danville High School. The Youth Leadership Conference will run from 8:15 a.m. to 2 p.m. Monday in room 306 of Vermilion Hall at Danville Area Community College. The event is being co-sponsored by Danville Mayor Scott Eisenhower, State Representative Chad Hayes, and State Senator Scott Bennett. During the conference, 5 to 7 students from each high school will participate in round-robin small group discussions with communities and civic leaders about hot topics in the area. In addition to Eisenhower, Hayes, and Bennett, Illinois Supreme Court Justice Rita Garman, local business people, educators, and other community members will lead the discussions on topics such as what it's like to run a business in the area and housing options that are available locally. The team participants will be encouraged to add their views and comments on the topics. They want to make the kids see there's a lot in Vermilion County to celebrate, said DHS math teacher Lori Woods, who is sponsor of the Future Problem Solvers. After the Youth Leadership Conference, area teens are invited to join the DHS students for a community service project that day at Veterans Affairs Ileana Healthcare System. The five DH students, Peyton Blodgett, Elijah Davis, Reese Marcott, Caleb Medina, and Michaela Smith, hatched the idea for the Youth Leadership Conference in their diversity project after noticing disrespectful comments on social media about the death of 16-year-old DHS student Devin McLeod last summer and the vitriol surrounding the presidential election. When we looked at social media, people let those biases out and the language was disrespectful, Woods said. It started a conversation about what diversity means. The DHS students say they feel that, for the most part, their school is accepting and diverse, but there are still biases out in the community. Biases are countywide. Using a model similar to Maslow's hierarchy, the DHS students develop sequential levels of tolerance, acceptance, and understanding on which they base their project. Sometimes people don't understand there's a difference between tolerance, acceptance, and understanding, DH student Caleb Medina said. People have to tolerate others' beliefs first before they can accept others and finally reach an understanding. The DH students put their tolerance, acceptance, understanding model into action, organizing the first Youth Leadership Conference, as well as getting involved with other activities. The students entered a float titled The Greatest Gift of All, Tolerance, Acceptance, and Understanding in the Night of Lights Parade, and distributed trays of paper stars with quotes from authors at the Vermilion County Clerk's Office the day after the November elections to show appreciation to the employees. The Future Problem Solvers team also worked with the high school's Gay Straight Alliance to distribute candy with positive messages of acceptance in the hallways of DHS. In addition, the DHS students attended Project Uplift at Danville Public Library. The January event connected homeless individuals and families with resources and community services. The high school students also have been mentoring their elementary school counterparts, a young Future Problem Solvers team of 3rd through 5th graders at Mark Denman Elementary School. We've been giving them ideas they can do for their project, DHS student Michaela Smith said. The DHS Future Problem Solvers will present its Roots of Diversity project at the Future Problem Solvers International Competition, June 7th to 11th, at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse. And now, another article with the headline, Students Turn to Students for Help, Tech Club Puts Computer Skills to Work for Free. Dateline Danville. After Neil Young bought a laptop for his medical office personnel program at Danville Area Community College, he needed help setting it up. He didn't call the Geek Squad. He turned to his fellow students. The students are members of DAX Tech Club, which, since August, has been servicing the personal computers and laptops of students, faculty, and staff at no charge. "They've helped me figure out a lot of things," Young said, "including installing Windows, anti-malware software, and Microsoft Office. It's especially helpful for students who don't always have the money to take it somewhere." The club had been around for about 2 decades, said Professor Jeff Wise, an information systems instructor, and this club's faculty sponsor. It originally met twice a year, and its purpose was to keep students up to date on the latest technology. Wise and Bruce Rape, Dean of the Business and Technology Division, talked about changing the focus to help students and staff with their computer problems and provide hands-on experience to computer and network administration students. "But doing something like this takes a tremendous amount of time and dedication," Wise said. "This year, we just happened to get the right group. They had the set of skills we knew others could benefit from, and they wanted to help other college students." College members started staffing room 138 in the Brown Technology Center, the building's main computer lab, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Fridays, hours they still keep. "We worked on a few machines," Wise said. "Then they said, let's advertise this. So we put up flyers around campus. The machines started coming in." Members have done a little bit of everything, including install software and updates, diagnose and troubleshoot problems, remove viruses and malware, and replace broken screens or other parts. "When hard drives fail, we'll try to extract their data and replace the hard drive for them," Wise said, adding they don't want students spending money on something that can't be fixed. "We've had high-end gaming rigs that go for $3,500 in here," he continued. "We had a student who wanted a gaming computer. She bought all the parts, and we built it for her." Students and staff pay for any hardware expenses, but the labor is free. "If they took it to a professional, they would pay $125 for labor," said Wise, who estimates the club has saved clients about $15,000 to date. The club has also saved the college big bucks. A couple of years ago, a computer-controlled 1998 Cincinnati lathe used in DACC's manufacturing program stopped working. Officials were still deciding whether to try to repair or replace it, both major investments. Wise, club president Jesse Schmidt, and club member Warren Holden were able to rebuild the computer in about a month. "We had to use some old-school technology from the 90s, but we got it running," Wise said with a laugh, adding the technology was likely developed before Schmidt and Holden were born. "This is what I try to explain to my students. Almost every career you can think of utilizes technology, and if it fails, they will need a computer person to repair it. And this is one of those cases. It's the perfect example of worksite learning," Dave Keatsman, Vice President of Instruction and Student Services, said, adding the three saved the school at least $30,000 to boot. Now the club is working on setting up a help desk, which will allow clients to schedule appointments and explain their problem online. "I'm terribly proud of them," Wise said, adding he's just the facilitator. "They're the ones who put this whole thing together. They donate their time on Fridays, and if a student can't come in then or a job takes longer, they'll come in between classes." Students said they do so because they've already gotten a lot from Wise's program in the club. Several said it's given them a new focus and purpose in life. Schmidt said he worked in manufacturing for 3 years. "I was wanting to make a better life for myself," he said. "I love serving people and using my skills and abilities to help them. The tech club has given me the opportunity to put my skills to use." Both Eureka, Eric Glover, and Mike Fogel had successful careers as a computer technician specialist and an IT trainer, respectively, and both found themselves in the position of having to start over. Glover moved from Chicago to Danville, and Fogel was downsized, and both realized they needed to continue their education to jumpstart and advance their careers. When I was getting ready about going back to college, I thought, I'm going to be that grandpa in the corner, Fogel admitted. But we had a very diverse group, and we interact well. Being part of the club makes me feel valuable, added Glover, who also feared returning to the classroom after a long absence. I know I can still help someone, and I've been out in the real world, so I can offer that experience to the team. Holden said he started going down the wrong path in life. Had he continued, I assumed I was going to be dead or in prison. I had to have something to grasp onto to move forward, and technology has always been my passion, said Holden, who flourished in college, setting among people who shared his passion. Now Holden is close to earning his associate degree and excited about his future. He's also excited about what he'll be leaving behind. We are the first edition of this club, Holden said. We want to build something the people after us can build on, and something that will last and benefit the DAC community. And now the time for the obituaries. And the first is for Cheryl L. Burke, 70, of Detroit, who died on Wednesday, April the 5th, at Carroll Foundation Hospital in Urbana. In lieu of flowers, the family wishes memorial donations to be given to St. Mary's Catholic Church, 231 North State Street, Westville. A memorial mass will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, April 8th, that's tomorrow, at St. Mary's Catholic Church, Westville. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to the mass at the church. As were her wishes, Cheryl donated her body to science. Sunset Urbis Funeral Chapel in Westville assisted her family with arrangements. And the next is for John S. McMaster, 62, of Cayuga, Indiana, who died from injuries sustained in a car accident on Monday, April 3rd, at Indiana University Health Methodist Hospital in Indianapolis. His funeral services will be at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, Saturday, April 8th, at Diverter Funeral Home in Cayuga. Officiating will be Keith Warner. Burial will be in Eugene Cemetery in Eugene, Indiana. Visitation will be at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, Saturday, April 8th, until time of services at the funeral home. Contributions may be made to the American Lung Association, 115 West Washington Street, Suite 1180 South, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46204. And the next is for Betty Ruth White of Danville, who died on Tuesday, April 4th, at Presence United Samaritans Medical Center in Danville. Memorial service will be at 2 p.m. Monday, April 10th, at the chapel in Kennecott County Park. All friends and family are welcome to attend. And the next is for Hazel Arlene Clift, 80, of Attica, Indiana, who died on Thursday, April 6th, at St. Elizabeth East Hospital in Lafayette, Indiana. Funeral service will be at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, Sunday, April 9th, at Sterling Christian Church, 701 South Sterling Avenue, Vetersburg, with Pastor Gary Johnson officiating. Visitation will be 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time, Saturday, April 8th, at Sterling Christian Church. Burial will follow in Mount Home Cemetery in Covington, Indiana. Memorial contributions may be given to Sterling Christian Church. And the next is for Helen Frances Compton, 90 years old, of Hoopston, Illinois, who died on Wednesday, April 5th, at Carroll Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Cremation rites will be accorded, and a visitation will be from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday, that's tomorrow, April 8th, at Anderson Funeral Home, 427 East Main Street, Hoopston. A memorial service will follow the visitation and will begin at 1 p.m. Saturday at the funeral home, with Pastor Jeff Alexander officiating. Memorials may be made to the Hoopston Animal Shelter, 901 West Main Street, Hoopston, Illinois, 60942. And the next is for Debbie Ann Martini, Hardin, age 62, of Spring Hill, Kentucky, who died on March 30th at Vanderbilt Medical Center in Nashville. The family will hold a private celebration of life. Heritage Funeral Home is assisting the family with arrangements. In lieu of flowers, the family requests memorial donations to the Alzheimer's Association, 4825 Truesdale Drive, number 200, Nashville, Tennessee, 37220. And the next is for Everett V. Carlson, 85, who died at Presence Covenant Medical Center in Urbana on April 4th, 2017. A celebration of Everett's life will be held on Saturday, April 8th, that's tomorrow, at 11 a.m. at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville, with Pastor Joe Humricus officiating. Visitation will be held on Friday, April 7th from 4 to 7 p.m. at the funeral home. He will be laid to rest at Greenwood Cemetery in Danville. Memorials may be made to the Vermilion County Humane Society. And now we're back to the other articles, and this one has the headline, Hoopston Council Hears About Land Bank. Dateline Hoopston. Patrick O'Shaughnessy, Executive Director of the Vermilion County Land Bank, spoke to Hoopston's council member at Tuesday's meeting about the land bank. The land bank is able to eliminate tax liens on properties to get them rehabilitated, according to O'Shaughnessy, and most importantly, back on the tax rolls. He added, people may be more willing to work with the land bank than City Hall. The land bank includes most of the Vermilion County towns, with the exception of Fithian, Sidell, and Fairmount. O'Shaughnessy planned to give presentations to each of those towns, probably this month, about joining the land bank and the advantages it would give to each municipality. The land bank at present has $40,000 from the Illinois Housing Development Authority grant for which the land bank applied. The money can be used to demolish about 10 abandoned properties in Hoopston and Georgetown, O'Shaughnessy said. Since Hoopston has the largest share of abandoned properties, while many of Georgetown's properties still have owners, the larger portion of the grant would probably be awarded to Hoopston. The reimbursement program will be open in May and run for 2 years, said O'Shaughnessy, adding the land bank has enough funds to cover the costs up front. Mayor Bill Krusenberry said the city has negotiated a landfill dumping fee for the property demolitions that could save the city hundreds of dollars in fees. However, he added, the city needed to be made aware of the demolitions before each to alert the landfill. The city will be billed and the responsible demolition person will reimburse the city for the fees. Selection of the five properties was referred to the Civic Improvement Committee. O'Shaughnessy added, there are USDA low or no income loans available to senior citizens for new roofs, new windows, and etc. However, the seniors must apply for them on their own, not through the land bank or other government branches. In other council business, council members unanimously approved combining the planning and zoning boards into one 7-member body with staggered terms of office of 1 to 5 years. Also approved unanimously was Mike Bain as the new zoning compliance officer, replacing the retiring John Holt. The council will meet again at 7 p.m. April 18th at City Hall, 301 West Main Street. That's all the time we have. I look forward to reading with you again soon. This has been Lois Pausch reading the Vermilion County News for Friday, April 7th. Bye.